I'm with the cellist Matt Heimovitz. Matt and I, we've talked before about your previous projects. Really interesting stuff. This is the first time we've done a video chat, so it's nice to see you, by the way.
Nice to see you.
Yeah. I just want to read the first part of your bio here, the first sentence or two with a couple of quotes in it for people who don't know who you are and what you've accomplished during your wonderful career. Renowned as a musical pioneer, multi-Grammy nominated cellist Matt Heimovitz is praised by the New York Times as a ferociously talented cellist who brings his megawatt sound and uncommon expressive gifts to a vast variety of styles. Now, that's quite high praise coming from the New York Times. And there are several other quotes in your bio as well. But it also points out that you're really good at creating these innovative projects that usually involve performance or they involve a recording series. And today we're going to talk about this series, which is called Primavera, right? Primavera 2, The Rabbits. I mean, that title alone needs some explanation. But maybe you can start by talking about the Primavera project and how this particular part of it came to be and what it is, what it's about.
Sure. Well, this is a collaboration with Jeffrion Young and the artist, the visual artist, Charlene Von Hale, who spends her time between Marfa, Texas and New York City. We have created a large-scale commissioning project. We're commissioning 81 composers to write solo cello pieces over the we have about half of them now over the last 2 years through the pandemic, and then we have probably another year or two to go for the rest. But really, it originated with a common interest in Botticelli's Primavera painting and really all the different themes and the relevance and interpretations to contemporary society and just the continuity of or I should say maybe the cycles of history, really, and cycles of nature through the ages. And so Charlene created a Primavera 2020, a painting that was a response to the Botticelli. And then from there, we're giving the composers both of these paintings and basically asking them to engage them in whatever way they desire to, and each one of these composers comes from a very different background and really gravitates to different aspects of the painting, from the environmental aspect. And you know, in the original Botticelli, there are hundreds of species of flora in that painting. It's really kind of mysterious, you know, why all of these flowers are depicted so accurately and beautifully. And and there are 9 figures, and they tell a story or various stories and narratives from Greek mythology to more Renaissance ideas of love and spring and marriage. And you know, it's a very potent painting, and what Charlene has done is actually very prophetic in some ways, and sort of its darker vision of that original painting. And so that's the origin of the project. And what we're talking about today is the music and some of the extraordinary music that has arisen out of these two paintings from a very diverse set of composers.
Now, you say that there are different series of music obviously being released on CDs. So is the idea that you're focusing on a part of Charlene's painting for each of these series, or how does that work? Because The Rabbits is kind of like a couple of figures that occur within the larger painting.
Right. So, The Rabbits, it's interesting. Yeah, so the way we're presenting this is, as soon as the pieces are ready, we go down actually to Marfa, Texas, and we record them in the artist's studio. She has this incredible cathedral ceiling studio that in Marfa, Texas. And so that's where we're doing the recordings. As soon as they're ready, we are releasing them in batches rather than waiting for all 81 to be composed. And that's what we can do in the, you know, over the pandemic that was fairly, I mean, it was complex to do, actually. I was going to say easy to do, but it's not. It wasn't easy because the producer was in New York City and we were Zooming in and he was receiving high def sound. And I mean, it was just actually quite extraordinary technologically. But we were able to record all of these pieces. And so we're releasing them, you know, in groups of a dozen or so. Maybe, I think the first one had 14. And yes, so each of the covers focuses on a different detail of Charlene's painting. And the painting will be revealed to the public in April. It was picked to be featured at the Venice Biennale. And so it will be in Venice from April to November. So if you can get to Venice, that is a good way to experience the whole painting. But for now, you're getting details of the painting through these covers. All the music has been released digitally so far, so it's all being streamed, you know, on wherever you stream your music or download your music. And we haven't made any CDs yet for this project, but maybe around Venice we'll come up with maybe a CD or LP. I'm not sure exactly what direction we'll go with it, but please do. We're gonna be there for much of April, so we're very, very excited, and it's just something really to look forward to.
So it kind of sounds like first come, first serve with these composers as far as the recording goes, but you've got some of the well-known contemporary composers on here, like Nico Muhly and Missy Mazzoli and Sky Mackley, even people like Gordon Getty, Jennifer Jolly. These are names that I know from the new music community. But you also have other composers from different cultures and different styles of composing. Can you talk about some of those composers a little bit?
Sure. I love Niloufar Noorbakhsh's piece, Cyclical Rabbits. And, you know, just for one second to go back to the rabbits, they are in Charlene's painting, and it's a theme that she uses quite often. And she has many, many rabbits on her property in Marfa, Texas, all around. And so she stuck those rabbits in this painting. They're not in the original Botticelli painting. But anyway, Niloufar was really into those rabbits. And they sort of are in the place of where the graces, the three graces, are in the Botticelli painting. So in a circle, dancing. And there's all kinds of course, symbology with the rabbits as well. For Charlene. So, Niloufar comes from a Persian background. She's Iranian, and you can hear, I think, in the beginning, the cello is transformed into an oud, into a sort of a Persian instrument, a plucked instrument like guitar. And the material that she uses is very much sort of Persian modes, I would say, in her writing, and it's just very haunting and beautiful. Her piece, I really it's one of my favorites, actually. I shouldn't pick any favorites, but I do love that. love that one. And you know, other influences, Tomika Reed. I can't remember the whole idea of this project is that composers who we select then recommend composers for the next generation of composers. So we start off with 9 composers, and then the next 9 are recommended, and so on until we get to 81. That's the basis around the 81 number. And I don't remember who recommended Tomika, but we started listening to her music, and both Jeffrey Ann and I, who are really collectively sort of determining what direction to go with these composers, we were blown away by her. She's a jazz cellist, and we really loved the music. And when we contacted her, it turned out, you know, she was very surprised to hear from me. She said, "Are you the Mahayovitz?" And it's just a mutual fan club. We really love each other's music, and she wrote a really very beautiful piece, sort of vol-planing, the idea of soaring through the canvas and sort of diving down, and these birds that can travel over oceans, you know, for weeks at a time. They're gliding over the ocean. And that idea is depicted in Tomika Reed's piece.
Yeah, I love how you've described your friendship with her, as, you know, professional and personal. It's not the kind of relationship you can have with somebody like Beethoven or, you know, Mozart or somebody like that. I imagine working with all of these different composers, you know, it presents its challenges here and there, I'm sure, but also the rewards must be tremendous for you.
You've nailed it. You know, that I think having a living, breathing human being to have these conversations with, to workshop the piece, to try different things, to know what they like, what they don't like, to shape it in a way that I can connect with the music and also, you know, really gets to the heart of the composer's vision. For years and years, the minute I discovered that this was possible with a living composer, I really sought it out. And with this project, it takes me out of my comfort zone. And, you know, I'm no longer working with the same composers that I work with year in, year out. This is taking me to whole different languages and backgrounds. You know, I'm entering these musical worlds that I've really never entered before. And I've done a lot of new music, but this is, you know, it's sort of a learning experience and discovery. It truly is a journey, you know, to have something that's expansive and to have so many different personalities to work with. And you're right. It makes a big difference to get to know the human being behind the notes. One of the composers that we're going to be releasing soon is actually two pieces of Philip Glass, that he, one that he wrote specifically for this project, and one that he gave me when we visited him for the first piece. So we got two for one, but we'll be releasing those. And Philip is a good example of that, because I was not an early Philip Glass, you know, follower. I tended to play more maximalist music, Elliot Carter and, you know, a lot of the Europeans, Hans Werner Henze, Luciano Berio, Ligeti, all of that. And when he asked me to play his music, I started to get to know him, and that made a very big difference in how I perceived the music and my relationship to the music and how I understood what my role would be in playing his music. So it really is a very, very important relationship, this relationship between composer and performer. And to some degree in the 20th century, we lost that connection. There was a sense of mistrust between the two. You know, a composer, let's say like Milton Babbitt, you know, when a performer would say, "Oh, that's too hard," he would say, "Well, I'm not writing it for you. I'm just writing it because I want to write it." And you know, and then so there was this bit of an antagonistic relationship. And I think now we're going back to, you know, composers really wanting to engage performers and to make sure that their music is played to its best, and you know that it has expressive meaning and connection with audiences.
But you talk about how this has been sort of a journey of discovery for you. I wonder if working with so many composers, and you still have a good deal of this ahead of you, are you learning technically how to do things with your cello, having played all of this new music? I mean, has it affected how you approach the instrument?
In many ways it has, and it goes both ways. I mean, I have done a lot of new music, so I occasionally I'll suggest something, you know, that I kind of see where a composer's going, and I'll suggest something that might amplify what they're doing or somehow it might make the instrument resonate in a different way. And so it's a back and forth. But for me, the thrill of playing this music is that some of these composers are not cellists, and they force me to go in directions that I never knew about or that I never expected. So absolutely. And this is, again, through our tradition, the compositional process. You know, if you go back to Beethoven, I think it was Schepanzig, who the violinist that he was working with for the late string quartets, you know, who asked him about one of the late quartets and said, how do I do this? Do you really want me to put all those notes in one bow? Or I can't remember exactly what the question was, but Beethoven said, do you think that I consider such mundane issues like your bowing? I like to be thrown into a musical world that at first glance it seems impossible, and you know, you just have to give it a chance. You enter it, and then gradually you realize, oh, this can actually be idiomatic to the instrument. It's just never been done before.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, my next point was to talk about how you've influenced those composers, but you took the words out of my mouth for that one, which is good. I mean, the relationship between a performer and a composer is, I think, probably different depending on, you know, who's in that role. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about the style of Charlene van Hale, because I think I've got this painting here, right? I don't know if you can see that or not, but that's the painting. And it's an interesting mixture of like cubism and sort of expressionism, or a little bit of kind of primitivism, you know, if that makes sense, in her painting that takes the emotion of the Botticelli and kind of spills it out on the page. Is that a fair assessment?
That's really interesting. I think that's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, she's thought of as an abstract artist. And this is a very different kind of painting for her in a way. She doesn't usually do figures. But she does have certain symbols that keep recurring in her work. The rabbits is one of those recurring motifs. One of the composers wrote a piece that'll be in Primavera 3, actually, in the next album. It was Doña Gerard who wrote. She's Palestinian, and she wrote the Drowning Meadow. So she saw that Charlene van Hale had transformed the forest of Botticelli into a swamp. So you can kind of see this watery aspect to it. And Charlene really loved that that image. So how do I put it? I think all those influences that you mentioned are there. And I think she's at a point in her painting that she just can do what she wants, and she doesn't have to be pigeonholed as one thing or another. It's just, again, you know, going back to Philip Glass, people think of him as a minimalist composer, but if you listen to what he's been writing over the last 20 years, it's very neo-romantic, and so I don't know that you can call him a minimalist composer anymore, or maybe he never was. I don't know. It's you know, or maybe he's minimalist to the same degree that a Bach prelude with 16 notes running all the way through with the patterns is minimalist. You know, it's sort of so it's sometimes hard to categorize, but I think she has done something very much a response to the Botticelli, but it's Charlene's painting, and she takes it in a whole different direction.
Yeah. Well, I you know, I'm not an art critic, nor am I qualified to.
Yeah, me too.
I was curious about the relationship between Charlene and the actual painting and the composers. I assume that they're taking inspiration from a certain aspect of the painting or the painting as a whole. Did she do any talking to or working with any of these composers aside from you recording at her studio?
She has. So when we record them, the composers join us by Zoom, and every single one of them, maybe one or two couldn't make it, but with each of those Zoom sessions, as we're recording, Charlene has spent a lot of time in the room with us, with Jeffrey Ann and me, as we record these pieces. And frankly, I've never had anybody in the recording space as I'm recording. I find it a very vulnerable moment. You're sort of, you're not sure who you're playing for. You're you know, looking for a certain perfection. you're you know, striving for something, and if something's not quite right, you know, it gets frustrating. So this was the first time that I had an audience, which was really inspiring to me, because this is through the pandemic, where so many concerts were canceled. So I didn't have an audience out there for so long. So having Charlene there and Jeffrey Ann, it made a big difference in terms of the live feeling of the performance. And Charlene Von Hale would speak to all of the composers, and they asked questions, and the painting was behind me, so the composers were seeing the painting as we were recording their piece. And it was more of an inspirational moment. I don't know that she didn't speak to any of the composers, you know, as they were composing or writing. It was really about the composer's own perspective and their interpretation. There's no right and wrong, or, you know, asking Charlene, did she mean this or did she mean that? They were on their own for that aspect of it, and also for what engaged them in the painting. Some kind of saw the whole painting and the Botticelli in a kind of a larger, you know, trying to get to the spirit of the whole painting. Others, you know, were into the into Venus figure, or into the rabbits, or the, you know, just various aspects, or of course the story of Zephyrus and the all the gender issues that brings up.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talking about the recording experience and this experience in particular, because you've done a lot of recordings, and you have your own record label, which is part of Pentatone. How does that relationship work? You have Oxengale Records, and then you're teaming up with Pentatone Records, which you've done before. What is the relationship there?
Well, we've been collaborating since 2015 on all of the albums that have come out, and they also have released some back catalog for us, and they're just wonderful and very much collaborative. This idea is ours. It's the Primavera project, really, and Oxengale has facilitated the recording and making that possible, and organizing the engineer and the producer and everything that goes around a recording. And then Pentatone, at that point, once we deliver the master, they get involved, and so the design work with the covers and marketing and distribution, of course, they're doing everything else. So it's really, we're very fortunate to have kind of gone through a very tumultuous time in to some degree in the music industry, in terms of, you know, format, how people experience their music, going from CD to streaming to download. You know, it's just the navigating all of that. We've been with Pentatone through all of it, and it's really, we feel very fortunate to be collaborating with them, especially through this period, and being able to do what we dream up and get it realized and get it out to people.
That's great. I also just want to say, before I let you go, that I love the arrangement of all the pieces on here, because each one sounds so fresh and different from what came before it. It's really a serendipitous collection of composers you have here. So thank you for that. Thank you for the performances. We do want to mention now, this is a digital release, so folks can find it at all the usual suspects, right, for digital download. And there is a website for the Primavera Project, which is just,
yes,
primaveraproject.com, right? And
that's right.
What is your website again?
You know, don't go to my website for now. I have to rehash the whole thing. Go to the Primavera Project, and it's really this. What's wonderful there is that you can also read about each of the pieces there in the composer's own words. So if you click on the composer, you will discover more about each piece. And there's some beautiful liner notes, actually. And for example, David T. Little's piece from the first album is a really beautiful program note, actually, for his first piece. And his piece is very beautiful, too. So I encourage people to go there. There's videos there. There are already 6 videos that we made in Far West Texas. In the middle of the pandemic, we were outdoors and just it's magical, surreal landscape, and just taking the cello into unusual places outdoors. And we just created more videos in New York because the painting went from Marfa to New York City to Charlene Van Hale's gallery, the Petzl Gallery. And so while it was there, we decided to take advantage of that and make a few videos of the new some Missy Mazzoli and Tomika Reed piece and Philip Glass, and that'll come out soon on the website, and then we'll add more content. So I encourage people to just follow us at theprimaveraproject.com, and that's a great way to learn more about the project.
Great. Well, Matt Heimovitz, wonderful cellist, always inventive, always have got something that catches, you know, the ear as well as the mind. It's a wonderful collection of new music here. Primavera 2, The Rabbits, the name of it, digitally released. And we'll link to theprimaveraproject.com on the video as well. Matt, thank you so much for telling us about this project and this recording here at FM 91.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much. ¶¶